This is CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com. 360 Biz on CliffCentral.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Debo Homa Fodi. Welcome to another exciting installment of 360 Biz. It's actually an interesting song that we are just playing right now, Imali. You know, I'm actually hearing this song for the first time. I never knew of this song, but I mean, the message on this song, it actually speaks about how these days, at this day and age, Bulelani, we're killing each other for this money. That, you know, what is this one thing that we're killing each other for? You know, I mean, it's actually something that is interesting. Do you know of the song?
No, definitely. I love the song. I know of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the first time I came into contact with the song, I was blown away because it's a very beautiful song. But the most important thing is speaking about something so relevant, because more than life itself, what we have put before other people, friends, family, and everyone else around us is money.
Yeah.
So to a certain point, it's money first.
Yeah, and
anything.
And come to think of it, Bulelani, it's actually worrying that we work for this money so much that we don't eat healthy, chasing money.
Yeah.
We don't go to gym, we're chasing money. We don't even spend time with family, we're chasing money.
No, that's true. I mean, I think up until recent, I just joined the gym.
You joined the gym?
I just joined the gym.
Really?
Yeah, man, because I mean, I think I came to a startling realization that I'm going to keep making it and I'm going to keep running around, but my body's going to keep decaying.
Mm.
Yeah. And I mean, if I don't take care of it, if I don't utilize the money to live longer, then it would have worked against me.
No, it's actually true. I mean, you're reminding me of a discussion I once had with one of my mentors, the mining mogul, Mike Deke.
Yeah, yeah.
He was saying he's very health conscious. And I was asking him to say, I mean, dude, you're so health conscious. I mean, why such health, you know? Why you take your health so serious? He says, no, once upon a time, I mean, he used to wake up about 18 hours a day. And until he was admitted in hospital.
Yeah, no, that kind of...
And he said for him, that was a wake-up call to say, dude, you'll work, make all these millions and billions. The next thing, you'll spend the rest of them taking care of your health.
No, but it's true. And I mean, it's very, very important. I mean, personal health. But more than that, I think, you know, looking at the topic, money is a very, very sensitive issue. But it's one of the things that we all need, but we hate to admit oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of some of the things that I'd like us to look at is, you know, I was talking to someone earlier on, late last week, actually, on Saturday. And I was like, but what is more important to you? Is it money or passion? Because I hear a lot of guys running around talking about we are social entrepreneurs. But I'm of the belief that you have to be a capitalist before you're a socialist, because how am I able to? But then, you know, where then do you draw the line? If you want a billion, you got to work, you know, that kind of thing. But
and interesting enough, I mean, Bulelani, I just got back this morning. I went to the Eastern Cape. Actually, from Cape Town, came here, went to KZN. From there, went to Margate. It's about 3 hours from KZN.
Yeah.
And from there, I had to take a car and drive all the way to Mthatha. It was actually the first time in Mthatha. And the most interesting thing that I've realized, I mean, there's towns that are sitting with so much budget. And there's all these potholes in the middle of the road. It was actually a bad, experience for me to say, I mean, how do we have such big roads, big holes and potholes right in middle of town?
I mean,
and I mean, one of the things as I was asking people around, and people were saying, the budget is there, but now it's the spending that's a problem. It's because money disappears. There's money looting. There's tenders that are disappearing. You know, people are getting appointed for tenders before they actually start working. They already got paid. They start buying those Mercedes Benz and be doing all of those things. And I mean, that goes to show, I mean, the level of crime, I mean, that people are doing out there as far as money is concerned. I mean, what you said is that, are we chasing money or are we chasing passion? It's because obviously, if ever you don't have that passion, the money becomes the driving factor.
No,
I think that's why, obviously, the discussion that we're having today being the discussion of white collar crime. I mean, economic crime continues being an absolute threat in 2016. Economic crime remains a serious challenge to business leaders, government officials, and private individuals in South Africa. White collar crime is costing business billions of rands annually, with detection method not keeping not keeping pace. Increasingly, South Africa have lost confidence in the law enforcement agencies. Joining me on the discussion is Mr. Trevor White, one of the directors for forensic services at PwC, being PricewaterhouseCoopers. I mean, these guys, they've actually launched, they've actually hosted a media session last week sometime, where they were sharing their insight of their bioannual economic crime survey 2016. I mean, they shared some insight and challenges facing SA and international organization and leaders. I mean, this survey analyzes, amongst other things, crime statistics in South Africa, the type of economic crime in SA, the profile of typical fraudsters, procurement fraud, cyber crime, and money laundering, and a whole lot of other things. That's why we felt with Bulelane that today we want to make a show focusing on them, because it's something that obviously, as a business community and as a country, it's something that we're trying to improve and grow the economy of the country. But obviously, we can't do that if ever we have crime that is affecting us. Before I actually welcome in, so you're allowed to join in on the discussion. Our student line is 0861-555-189. 0861-555-189. We're on Twitter as well. Our Twitter handle is at cliffcentral.com. We're on Facebook as well. Our Facebook page is Cliff Central. We're on WeChat as well. WeChat ID, it's Cliff Central. Let me take this opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to welcome the leader himself, the man that was behind the study, you know, within Africa, and is it Africa or was it globally, Trevor, that you were leading this initiative?
It was the global survey.
It was a global survey. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that is the voice of Mr. Trevor White. Mr. Trevor, do you want to say hi to our listeners? Tell us who you are, what is it that you do?
Afternoon, listeners. My name is Trevor White. I'm a partner at PwC in the Forensic Services Department, and effectively what we do is we undertake investigations on behalf of clients, whether it be government departments, private sector clients, into fraud and corruption, money laundering, cyber crime and the like, working very closely with the police and the NPA to ultimately hopefully prosecute the perpetrators, and hopefully the NPA will eventually send them to jail.
Really? But I mean, isn't that the? I mean, Bulelane, I would think that's the job of the police,
yeah,
the job of the regulators, the job of. I mean, you guys, you are a private company, and if I'm not mistaken, you guys are a consulting company. Why would a consulting company be involved in something that has to do with crime?
You see, effectively, the police don't have the resources and sometimes the skill sets to investigate economic crime. Economic crime
no.
is...
No. Why, yeah. Bulelane, why the heck are we having police if ever they don't have the resources to be inspecting and...
They arrest.
Okay.
So if you take, for example, a lot of it is an accounting exercise. So it's analyzing bank statements, financial accounting records, and tracing the flows of money. Now, that is a job for accountants. It's not a job for a murder and robbery policeman to do. And likewise, when it comes to cyber crime, you need to understand the workings of the computer to find documents that have been deleted off the computer, etc. So
yeah, no, that one, it's true. I've realized that some of our police officers, they're not computer literate.
Yeah, no.
You know, you give him, like, say, dude, you know.
The computer literally needs to be filled with blood everywhere.
Wow.
For him to say, that is the evidence, that is what you have done.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's interesting, actually. I never knew you guys worked to that extent. And I mean, how risky is it to be in this environment?
What? Okay. Yeah. So
now, that's him just cheering me on. How risky is it being in this environment, though?
I mean, there's a lot of people that don't like you as a result of the investigations you conduct, because end of the day, we effectively assist the police. We can't do the function of the police, but effectively our clients appoint us to do the legwork, prepare the evidence, which is then given to the police for the police to do their jobs. But if people are convicted, I mean, if it's a crime of more than 500,000 rand, they can go to jail for 15 years.
What?
So you don't make too many friends in this job.
Sure, and you know, interesting enough, what you're saying, I know of someone that used to be the head of auditor general, head of auditing, and they actually had to leave their job because now their life was threatened.
It can happen.
And remember as well, Bulelane, last year in the news, one of the directors for Gobodo, was actually taken out. Apparently, he was working on a couple of high-profile cases.
Yeah, Lawrence Mwepi, he was a colleague of mine. He used to work for PwC.
So now, I mean, Mr. White, aren't you afraid?
You have to take precautions. It's like any job. I mean, people are going to be upset with you, but I mean, you need to take precautions and be careful.
Yeah, no, this is...
This is
very interesting. But now tell me, I mean, if you guys are investigating individuals, obviously those individuals, I don't know, I'd assume that they'd be aware that you guys are carrying out an investigation on them, right? Do you notify them or...
Well, I mean, at some point you would interview them. You would. So if you're conducting an investigation on behalf of a company, you would interview the people that you're investigating and ask for explanations. But I mean, ultimately, if it goes to court, you would have to testify in court, so the people would know who you are anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, what's the likelihood now that if you're investigating me and I know that I'm guilty as heavens and I know that the evidence is pointing to me and you guys are just carrying out due diligence and formalities, what is the likelihood of you guys being able to trace me bribing you or one of your, you know, one of your colleagues?
To try and stop the investigation?
Yeah. Or maybe botch it or point it in a different direction, or that kind of a thing.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's why the employment criteria are exceptionally strict before we employ someone to do forensics. I mean,
I've seen that you guys do background checks and...
Yeah, so we do a lot of background checks on anybody before we would employ them to do an investigation.
Sure.
Okay. Now, I mean, you know, it's something that is very interesting. But now let's come to the survey that you guys have run. I mean, you guys have decided to run a global survey. I mean, who finances that? Does somebody pay you for that to guys do this survey, or how does it actually work?
PwC started it. This is our sixth survey, so we've done it for the last 12 years, and really the benefit. It's to the business community to identify where there are risks to their organizations.
Okay.
But at the same time, it gives us the opportunity to identify where those risks are and see whether we can provide a service to help clients mitigate the risks that they are facing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So now, I mean, looking at some of the leading observation, I mean, it says more than 2/3 of South African organizations, being 69%, have experienced economic crime. I mean, detection methods are not keeping pace. Significant change in the profile of perpetrators, with external and internal actors now evenly split. I mean, what opportunities are available for, I mean, countering economic crime proactively?
See, effectively, I mean, what the survey said was that in South Africa, there's 69% of the organizations suffered an economic crime, compared to only 36% of a global average.
Okay.
And unfortunately, South Africa was the highest in the world.
Hmm.
So
sure.
We had the worst economic crime out of 115 countries.
But how is it that we're higher than Nigeria? I would expect Nigeria would be the highest. Because, I mean, it's a country that's, you know, popularly known for fraud and all
that. Yeah, it is. But of the people that responded to the survey, 69% of the South African businessmen that responded said they'd suffered an economic crime in the last 2 years.
Okay. Maybe, you know, you're saying something very interesting. Maybe, Bulelani, let's try to understand how is this survey conducted? Because you speak of people that have responded to the survey. So take us from the beginning so that at least listeners as well are able to understand how is this survey conducted, where does it start, who's involved, you know, where do you guys get your facts?
So effectively, we send out Well, to start off, we decide on the questions we want to ask. So there's about 60 different questions that we come up with.
Okay.
A number of them are the same from year to year, so you've got a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And then we send those questions out. Effectively, the majority of them go to big business. So we want to know what are businesses suffering. So, and then we get responses. So, and it's an anonymous survey, so you don't know which particular entity has responded.
Okay.
And in the survey that we conducted, from a South African perspective, 83% of the respondents were from the private sector. Mm-hmm. So they weren't government.
Hmm.
So these statistics relate to business. They don't relate to government. And up to now, everybody says it's a public sector problem. But obviously, we can see from these results that it's very definitely a private sector or a commercial business problem. It's not just blame it on government. And that same methodology is used across the world. So there were 6,330 respondents globally. And there were 232 in South Africa.
Hmm. Okay, that's a big number.
Yeah, so then those survey results are all accumulated and analyzed out of our survey unit in Belfast in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on that, we use the statistics that come out of it and then have to try and interpret them and write the reports that you're looking at.
Mm. I mean, the report goes to speaking that South African exhibited low levels of confidence in local law enforcement agencies. I mean, saying economic crime is costing businesses billions, and 70% of South African respondents view local law enforcement agencies as being inadequately resourced and trained. It's some of the things that, as well, that you've made mention of it. What action do you take once fraud has been detected from an organization?
Well, you see, that's the important point. I mean, to start with your last point first, is to say, you've now suffered an economic crime. What do you do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, too many of our respondents, the local businesses, try and sort it out themselves. So they use internal resources, people that aren't trained in investing economic crime, and effectively, 9 times out of 10, they botch the evidence up. Mm-hmm. So that they can't actually, the evidence is then inadmissible at a later point when it comes to a criminal case.
Mm.
So what we asked them as one of the questions for the first time was to say, how do you perceive local law enforcement, and do you think they're adequately resourced and trained to investigate economic crime? And in South Africa, 70% said no, compared to a global average of only 44%.
Okay.
But the interesting thing is that the top 10 countries that said that had low perceptions, South Africa was the second highest.
Okay.
And the top 10 all came from developing countries. Mm-hmm. But number 11 on the list was Australia. Okay. And number 12 was the United States. Which I can see the look on your face. Everybody says, well,
the superpower.
how can there be a low perception? I mean, 51% of the respondents in the USA said they've got, they don't think the police are adequately resourced and trained to investigate economic crime.
Hmm.
And a former deputy director of the FBI, we spoke to him and we said to him, is this right? Because immediately we thought the results may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it's not all like you see on TV. He said, the top units of the FBI, etc., have the resources and the skills and the training. But if you go in any big city in America and go to the local law enforcement and report an economic crime, said the people who investigate it aren't properly trained and they don't have the resources to investigate it. So he said he wasn't surprised at the results in the survey.
Oh, wow.
Sure. And I mean, you're speaking of the resources. I mean, it also goes back to cybercrime. Obviously a threat in the business aspect. I remember, I mean, we as well did a show on POPI, Protection of the Personal Information Act. We kept on referring a lot to a lot of cybercrime that is taking place out there. I mean, your report goes to show that 32% of South African organizations reported having been victims of cybercrime. Most organizations are still adequately prepared to even understand the risk they face. I mean, with only 35% of organizations having a cyber incident response plan. I mean, it's more like, before maybe I actually want to ask you the question that I want to ask you, I mean, how will your cyber response plan stand up, to reality of the situation?
You see, effectively, that's the problem. Most people only think about how they're going to react to it once a cyber attack has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's hacked into your system, they've transferred money out of your bank account. I mean, we see all these examples of people's web pages being changed, funny pictures being put up, but that's a joke when people do that.
Yeah.
But the real issue is when they take down your websites that are earning you money, so people can't get to your business.
Okay.
Or they're transferring money out of your accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Or probably the most important, they're stealing your intellectual property. So if you've got some special recipe or way of doing something, and they get into your computer system, they steal it.
Hmm. That's true.
And then they can just make your – and that's the biggest problem globally now, is it's a growing issue where people are finding it's easier to steal intellectual property rather than to go through the development themselves.
Speaking of that, Bulelani, there's an article I was going through. I don't know if you remember the case. This boy stole I don't know how many billions on cybercrime.
Oh, yeah.
Then gave it away to people in Africa.
I forgot what country it is. Yeah.
To people in poverty. And right now, obviously, he received a death sentence. So part of receiving the death sentence is that I mean, he needed to be hanged. And he actually accepted the sentence with a smile.
With a smile.
Knowing that, you know what, he actually did a good thing. Taking, stealing from the rich.
Modern day Robin Hood.
And giving to the poor. I mean, Bulelani, it's something that for me, it's of a concern. I'm a businessman, yeah. You know. You are a businessman. And as a small business, you know, I mean, do you have any measures that are protecting you from cybercrime?
None. I mean, I think as much as my antivirus, my Kaspersky internet all around the antivirus, but apart from that, I wouldn't even know the extent to which it protects me, apart from the fact that there are certain firewalls and all that stuff that come into play. I think I'd only be able to notice after. I don't even know how effective they are because as a small business, I mean, I was talking to someone just today and they've got these great packages, you know, for safety and health and safety for businesses. But one of the things that I realized is that they've got these large lump sum amounts that need to be paid on a monthly basis on retainer, you know, charging like a corporate, like a large corporate when we, you know, we're growing. I think that understanding from a small perspective or a growing perspective, of what is more scalable for you to utilize as a system or a software. So up until you get to that pinnacle point where you're a Coke or you're a SABC or whoever, where you are able to have those kind of policies or systems in place to prevent you from any cybercrime.
I like what you're saying. So I mean, it now be speaking to Mr. White, you know, in regards to my question, to say, as small businesses, I mean, right now, big businesses is not only made up by big business. They were once small businesses. So now, I mean, cybercrime and things like these, and all of these things, I think they're more there for big business. Who's accommodating for the small business? Oh, now we've got people that are in small businesses that are listening, and obviously they want to prevent themselves from such. So, I mean, what can those people do?
I mean, cybercrime is not my area of expertise, but I mean, from the guys that work for me, I mean, antivirus and keeping it up to date is obviously your first defense, because the problem is people put it on and they think, well, it's on, I don't need to update it, I've put the software on.
Yeah, no one ever.
But the problem is the malware that's being developed. There's thousands of people out there, and there's new viruses coming out every minute, and these viruses are there for a reason. The people want to get access to your computers, and as soon as they've got access to your computer, they will get access to your banking details. Everybody does internet banking these days, and as quickly as possible, they will be transferring information out of your bank accounts. And the other thing is that when you get emails with attachments from people you don't know, the people that, when you open those emails and you open those attachments, they sometimes have viruses embedded in the picture or whatever you've opened that will then get onto your computer. If you don't open it, it won't be able to activate on your computer.
So now what you're saying, it's not advisable to be sending or to be receiving email from people you don't know?
Yep.
I mean, right now you don't know Bulelani. Bulelani sends you an email.
I won't open it.
Really?
No. Oh, I can read it, but I won't open it. I won't open attachments.
Because obviously, you're most likely to attach your company profile to see more about what we do. There's the company profile, you know, and I mean, it's something that definitely, you know, one thing I've seen that people send out, though, they send out links.
That's a point. Yeah. So when you open the link, just by way of example, when this survey was launched in the last week, because my name is attached to it, I've received probably 150 emails from people I don't know, and I don't want to know. I mean, it's people, all the scams that you can think of, saying there's $1 million in Nigeria that they need a bank account to use. There's some people from China sending me emails. I mean, I got an email last week from, in theory, the audit chairman of the Royal Bank of Scotland, but it was in Afrikaans. Now, Royal Bank of Scotland is based in Scotland. The chairman of the audit committee is not going to send me an email in Afrikaans. So it has to be a scam. And that's just because my name was out there all of a sudden, and people are reading it, and they just all trying their luck.
Sure.
So on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the irony.
Yeah. No. I mean, speaking of that, I mean, there's something, I mean, that as well. It's a, I mean, I know it's the biggest problem we have in South Africa, bribery.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, Bulelani, I know that personally I've faced the problem, right? Somebody calls me and says, dude, I've got a project for you. Like, really? Yes. And give me a code, this and this and this and this and this and this. You do all of that. And he says, no, my man. But for me to give you the project, you need to give me my card first.
Mm.
You're like, dude, what card?
Yeah.
I mean, well, you called me. I didn't go looking for you. Yeah. You said you want my services. Yeah. I've given you a code. I want to, you know. Render my services, and the next thing you're already telling me about a card. Have you experienced something similar?
I mean, that is what we experience on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know for the longest part I've been trying to get work from a particular municipality I'm a part of, a certain section, and it was a known that if in order to get any order below 30,000, you needed to part ways with 5,000. And wait a good month or 2 months, and then they throw work away. I mean, to the point where just quite recently, 2 weeks ago, I got some work with some department or company.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, after we got the work, so the situation there was, we've been quoting. Apparently, we were cheaper than all the other guys that had ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady was like, you know, my budget is 200. Why don't we just do stuff? Why don't you just charge more? Because you guys are really cheap and want to support black business.
Okay.
So we do just that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get a call then 2 days later after we get the purchase order. But dude, you got the order, right? I'm like, yeah, you need to give me a cut. What do you mean I need to give you a cut?
Mm. And they no longer shy about it.
Yeah, I'm like, need to give you a cut. I'm like, so I was direct to her. Mm. And in actual fact, she didn't call me. I called her because I just didn't feel right.
Mm.
So I called her. I was like, you know what, man? I just want to thank you. We actually got the order, but I just want to clear something off my chest. Were you doing this from the bottom of your heart, or is there an agenda? And at first she was like, no, there's no agenda. Two to three hours later, she called me up. She was like, no, you know what? There actually is an agenda.
Mm.
And I mean, most of this conversation is happening on text. And I'm like, this person has balls because they're not even scared that I'd go to their supervisors or superiors about this and show them and say, but look, this person is trying to solicit a bribe because this person initially called me and said, we've given you the PO. What I'd like is I'd like for you to actually source all the goods from a preferred supplier of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you're mad. And to the point where now she apologized and all that stuff. And I was like, but ma'am, don't do that. Because, I mean, now you're going to lose your job if you got kids and you're married. What's going to happen now over something as useless as 30,000 rand? Come on.
Mm. And, I mean, the survey says 15% of SA organizations have been asked to pay a bribe. But I think, Trevor, this is not true. We can't have 15%.
Nah,
of people that have been asked to pay bribe. It's way more than 15%.
We know.
So, I mean, it's something that affects us daily. So, it's definitely more than 15%. So, unless obviously it's the number of people that responded here
the respondents.
I think people don't want to admit they've been asked or that they've paid.
No. I've been asked.
Yeah.
I'm admitting. And I mean, it goes to say, I mean, while 88% of SA organizations have a code of conduct in place, and only 58% say that training is provided regularly. But I think for me, this one is just to tick the boxes, though.
Yeah.
That is the problem. But I mean, the reality is that for every corruptee that receives a bribe, there's a person that's prepared to pay it. And up to now, everybody says it's the government officials that are corrupt.
Mm.
But if the business people aren't prepared to pay the bribe, it would stop tomorrow.
Mm. But I've experienced being requested a bribe in private sector.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
no, it happens. But I mean, it happens everywhere. And the problem is that until people are prepared to say no, if no one was prepared to pay a bribe, it would be useless, the people asking.
No, that's true. And I mean, but I think...
So it starts with everybody. Yeah, it starts with me, it starts with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if enough people say no, then it will, over time, it will just phase out.
But is your compliance program properly addressing the evolving risk landscape, though?
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is where the companies look at their compliance program and say, have we got a process in place that will help us identify where there's potential corruption?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but a typical example is people put out a bid for goods, a tender, and they say the deadline is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
they make it ridiculously short. So only the person they told about it last week has actually got the stuff in place.
Exactly. Hey.
You know, so when you say that, it seems obvious, Trevor, but it happens all the time.
That's a good point that you're making there.
Or you put out a bid that comes out between Christmas and New Year. No one's at work. Only your friend submits a proposal. and it happens every year. You can we do a lot of work for government, and we look for those bids specifically because we know they come out at a time when they think no one's going to respond.
No, it's true, and I look for those as well. Eh? You see, December time. That's why December for me it's my most busiest. It's like my Fridays. My Fridays are my Mondays because that's where I'm most busy. You know, I mean, it's something that is. Out there, and people obviously they know that we're out there sipping cocktails and blooming by the sun, not looking for projects. I mean, then it goes back, I mean, to money laundering. Hence, even the report says only 50% of money laundering and terrorizing financing incidents in financial services organizations were detected by system alerts. It's something that is actually okay. I mean, this one, I remember there was a big case on Standard Bank, that for you to qualify for bonds, you needed to pay about 20,000 for a 2 million bond, or for, you know. So, and right now, in terms of, I mean, money laundering, Trevor, I mean, would you say, is this more than the issue of bribery in a country?
Yeah, it is, because, I mean, money laundering is the way that you disguise the money and you make it legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
So, gone are the days where you give the guy a briefcase of money and you say he has 100,000 rand. What does he do when he's suddenly sitting with 1 million rand in cash? He needs to buy something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where FICA comes in, where you've got to banks have got to report unusual deposits of cash, or if you buy a car for cash, the motor dealer's got to report it, because that's what people used to do. They would just go and buy a 1 million rand car for cash, because that's how they legitimize the money. So the people are getting more and more clever as to how they get the money into the systems. So you'll have some small little business that on the face of it can never make money but make super profits.
It's true. Hey, we're right.
They clean the money.
And then you say, well, how does this business make so much money? Because the profits are not coming out of that business. They're money that's getting pushed in from outside. And that's how they legitimize the money. And even pay tax on it.
But right now, you know what you're saying? It's very true. There's a guy, dude, in my township. Ne? This guy, he's a qualified accountant, CA. He's got this accounting firm. Dude, but personally, I'm not going to lie to you. I've never seen somebody go there or inquire about getting accounting services or finance or whatever. Yeah. But dude cleans money. Dude drives whatever car and all of that. You know, obviously, he's an accountant. Yeah. So he's got his taxes in order and all of that. But now, reality is now you realize some of the people that work for him, whether rendering a service and whatever, he deals with cash. You know, he deals with cash. So it means obviously he's got as well these small pubs that, you know. But obviously you can tell, no man, this thing, it's just a ghost. You don't give us that kind of money.
But now
the question is, who goes into those organizations to actually penetrate, to actually see if ever are they clients? Are they this? Are they invoicing? Are they? Because for the fact that they're doing all of those things, it says obviously right now there's, I mean, it works for them. They absolutely hide it well. There's no one that comes. I know in my company, there's no one that has ever came and knocked and said, let's see your clients. Let's see this and that. And, I mean, I transact serious business.
You see, that's where the Financial Intelligence Center, which monitors all banking transactions, their sole role is to identify suspicious transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a very small business and you don't normally deal in cash and you're suddenly depositing large amounts of cash, they will flag those transactions and they send it to the police for investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the problem comes is the resources. Do the police have the resources to follow up on all these suspicious transactions that were reported to them? But it's up to members of the public to report suspicious businesses to the police. And then the police, in theory, are supposed to investigate.
But now, you know what I've realized, though? People are afraid to be reporting these things. Because these guys will come after you, huh?
That's true.
These guys will come after you. I mean, right now, we're no longer driven by passion, but we're driven by money.
I agree. But, I mean, until people are prepared to stand up and be counted, I mean, everybody, if you look at our survey, big business says that they know bribery and corruption is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But then you ask them, are you prepared to stand up and take a public stand? And only 45% are prepared to take a public stand that bribery and corruption is wrong. So they obviously don't want to irritate people that are giving them business. Mm, but they know it's wrong. And that's the problem. Until we're prepared to stand up and be counted, it's not going to go away.
I mean, one person right now on social media says, don't forget to make reference to the Guptas. But I mean, one thing is that, I mean, there was an article as well that I posted earlier, Bulelan, on my Facebook about the president's son, I mean, doing major businesses with the Guptas. I mean, you guys, as big as you guys are, doing global surveys, studies and whatsoever, why aren't you coming after such people, though?
We only investigate people if we pay to investigate. I'm not a policeman.
It's a business.
Yeah,
so,
but...
So I need a mandate from someone to say, but it needs to be someone that's got an interest in the affair. So if there's a business that has been defrauded, they will ask me to assist with investigating. Mm-hmm. Or a government department that's been defrauded may ask us to come and assist them with the investigation. But I can't just go out there and say I'm going to investigate somebody. That's okay. I don't have a mandate, but, and I don't have a, and no one's going to pay me to do it.
Okay, but now, now you guys, you know what's my okay? Maybe let me come to this. I mean, Trevor, we've got small businesses, like myself, like Bulelani, and many others. I mean, we get screwed almost daily, dude, you know. the question is, can I come to a company as big as PwC to do investigation for me?
Yeah. I mean, we have some small clients. I mean, we do, I mean, PwC as a business has seen that emerging businesses are organizations that you need to work with. So we our objective is to develop those businesses to ultimately become big clients one day.
So now tell me, I mean, now how much are those big clients paying, those small clients paying? Because right now, Pela, Bulelani comes there, your invoice is Bulelani's annual, Bulelani's annual income. So, you know, it's...
Which is true.
I saw the car he was driving.
No. But seeing the car, I mean, it says nothing, really.
I know, because a lot of people, it's all about image.
Mm-hmm.
So that on the face of it, they look like they've got a lot of money, but they don't actually. Yeah. So they have a car, they have fancy clothes, but it's actually all owned by the bank.
That's true.
So it's all about an image. And unfortunately, that's become the problem now, is people are living, and to project this image, often they have to steal to get the money, because they can't afford the image.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. But I mean, we've got our clients start off with people who just want their tax return done or an assistance with some small thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it just depends what they are. And often the smaller the business, the simpler the system, so it's easier to find the problem. It's not a big complicated computer system that you've got to investigate.
Yeah, but now you've not answered my question. How do you charge a guy like Bulelang?
Same way I charge anybody, by the hour.
And how much is the hour rate?
It depends on what you want and depends on the level of person that we want that needs to work on the job.
Okay, but give us an estimation.
Even if it's ballpark figure.
It would start, a junior person working for me would charge probably 350 Rand an hour.
Okay. But that's a junior person.
Okay.
But then they don't see the problem there.
But then it will range and I'll charge you 3,500 Rand an hour. But you see, I won't do the whole investigation, but if it goes to court, I will go to court and testify in the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I will have junior people helping me do the investigation, and managers, and IT people, and a whole cross-section of people.
Okay. So now let me ask you this question, Trevor. I mean, you guys as a company, do you guys have a CSI? I'd like to think you guys have a CSI initiative.
Yes, we do.
What does the CSI initiative do?
A variety of things, from building schools to assisting with training people, dealing with school kids to identify people that want to become accountants at an early age, to help them with their maths and things that they need to get into university.
But anything in enterprise development?
There is, not from our side, I mean, not from the forensic side, but we do a lot of training around, I'm just trying to think, I mean, I'm from Durban, so we do stuff with the Itala Development Corporation around women training, emerging black businesswomen with business skills, tech skills, etc., to run their small businesses. So that's one of the things. So there's a number of those kind of initiatives.
But now, I mean, from what I hear, Bulelani, unless if ever I'm not hearing correctly, but I think there's nothing that is that they're doing that is strategically helping small business. In regards to, I mean, you in forensic and the director for forensic, obviously, maybe I would think that you'd have something that empowers small business as far as forensic matters is concerned, because it's something that affects them. It's something that right now they're not clued up about, they're not known about. We're taken in for a ride day in, day out, and right now you go to the police, they cannot help you. And right now, obviously, the best thing that the police can do is to call you, come to the police station. They say there's an investigation, you know, but they can only do so much.
Yeah.
I mean, we give them advice on where to go and the right people to talk to, because most people, it's just around knowing where to go to get the right results. I mean, because 9 times out of 10, people don't understand how to report a commercial crime case, what evidence you need to report it. And a lot of it actually involves the banks. They need to actually go and deal with the banks if money's being incorrectly taken out of their credit card or their banking details have been hacked and money's been misappropriated.
I'm thinking, Budelani, we're looking at we're going to be launching the afternoon discussions soon.
Yeah, yeah.
I think maybe let's invite PwC, the likes of Trevor and a lot of other people, so that they come speak to entrepreneurs, SMEs, and you guys come educate and inform them, because right now there's no one that is filling the gap. I mean, we're focusing on feeding the kids. Yes, we all need to feed the kids. But right now, one of the strategies as the country, it's so that we grow small business and that tomorrow it becomes a big business. And right now, if ever there's no one that is servicing that mandate or servicing those small business to actually help them become, big business, in terms of putting systems in place and doing, you know, other things, I think it's something that definitely could be beneficial to small business.
I mean, as I was saying, PwC's got a number of different departments, but I mean, we can definitely get our guys that deal with owner-managed businesses, help them with their strategic plans, etc. I mean, I'm sure more than one of those guys would be more than happy to come on your show and tell your listeners, give them some pointers on and answer questions on how to go about things.
No, definitely. I think maybe it's put me, please, in contact with someone that we can definitely be in contact with. So obviously there's someone that is listening out there that is obviously interested into going through the report themselves. I mean, where can they go get the report or get access to the report?
You can go to the PwC website, but the South African website is at www.pwc.co.za/crime-survey.
Okay, www.pwc.co.za/crime-survey.
And that will give you the South African report, and then linked to that, it goes to the global website where you can get all the global reports that were also issued for the different countries.
Yeah, I think Bulelani, you will tweet that.
No, definitely.
From them in for people to actually get to actually get more information about the survey that you guys are running. So then, how often do you guys do the survey? Is it annually?
We do it every 2 years.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, the planning, it probably takes about 14 months from when we start the planning to when we actually issue the report. So it would just end up overlapping. And also, it's a very expensive exercise. So it's not something that we're going to do every year. But also, you need to have the trends to have changed slightly so that you have something new to report. I mean, what has changed and where the opportunities going forward to defend yourselves?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's something that I think maybe we should be involved in the next survey. So to actually speak, because right now, looking at this report, I've been browsing and going through it, and right now, it's we're not as entirely accommodated as small business, And right now, obviously, we are very much affected by government. Businesses are closing down and a lot of other things, you know. And I think it would be wise for us to be involved and actually give our own opinions. You know, we can be very vocal as far as small business is concerned. But more than anything, I think, you know, Trevor, let me take this opportunity to thank you for joining us on the show. I mean, I think it was quite insightful. It's said that, you know what, we, especially when you're having a good time, time is so little, and we can't really do so much that we would have loved to actually go through it more in detail as far as the survey and the report that you guys have done as much as concerned. But I think obviously the overview that we've covered gives an idea in terms of obviously what to look out for and how to go about now protecting yourself as a business. But now tell me, does the report speak or cover about how to protect yourself as a business from all the aspects that we've covered, being bribery, cybercrime, and everything else?
Yeah, it does. It gives you a number of things to be aware of. So in each section, we've tried to give people some pointers as to how they can protect themselves. So like if you talk about corruption, we've given an example as red flags that could identify potential corruption. So a very short time period given to respond to a tender, procurement officials whose lifestyles appear to exceed their income levels, mm-hmm. orders consistently placed with the same supplier, cost of materials out of line when compared to related activities, and it goes on. So in the different sections, that was just around potential corruption, and then we've done the same in cybercrime, etc. Throughout the report, we've given things that people should look at and use to protect themselves.
Okay. So now, more than anything, we usually close the show with style, Trevor. I mean, there's someone that is listening out there. In closing, what would be your advice to them, to every young person, every corporate or every business person that is listening? Some want to go into business, but they hear such things on radio and they ended up not going into business. If you'd speak to those people today, what would you say?
Everybody starts small. So if you don't start, you don't have a chance of becoming big.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is that we can't always sit around and say and blame corruption and crime on the government. It's up to each individual to take a stand, and it starts with each person themselves. So if you take a stance against economic crime and say enough's enough, it can only enhance our country, and there's enough money in our country to pay for the services we need, as long as the money is used for those services rather than for corrupt people that are stealing the money and taking it away from the poor people who need the service delivery.
Hmm. No, I like that. Bulelani, in closing?
Go out there, get things done, let nothing stand in your way. Don't let things like bribes stand in your way, and make sure that you run the heavens away from them, because you don't want that kind of a reputation to mar your business in the next 4 or 5 years. Make sure that you keep a clean sweep, be a person of integrity, get things done.
Yes. No, it's fine. Mina, in closing, what I want to say is that the youth must go out there and learn about building institutions like banks, not churches. I mean, we've got institutions like PwC and many others out there that are out there doing things in the community that influence the business community as a whole. Sitting down and feeling sorry for yourself or saying you're not going to go into business because there's money laundering, there's bribery, there's all of this. You don't stop and not buy a car because now people are hijacking cars, you know. We still buy cars, we still do a lot of things. As much as right now we've got a lot of problems in business, we still go into business and we still strive to make it different and to make it better for us as a community. I guess this is all that we had for you today on 360 Biz with myself, Debohoma Fodi, with my boy Bulelani and Mr. Trevor White from PwC. We were speaking white collar crime. Catch us again next time for another exciting installment of 360 Biz right here on Cliff Central.
This is CliffCentral.com.